Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the May 8, 2024 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being made available via live teleconference for public access. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel of RI Housing speaking. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information and documents on each of the actions being taken this morning. If the teleconference portion of this meeting is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. With that, I'll turn it over to the committee chairman to call the meeting to order.
Thank you. Thank you, Corey. This is Kevin Orth. It's now 9:35, and I call the committee meeting. Carol, would you please take attendance?
Certainly. Commissioner Barry?
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Here.
Committee Chair Orth?
Here.
Commissioner Womer?
Here.
Commissioner Price?
Here.
Thank you very much. Love to see this long agenda. We had a little bit more time to digest. Awesome to see. So we will jump into item number one, which is approval of minutes of the Credit Committee meeting on April 10th, 2024.
So moved, Jonathan.
Second.
Thank you, Sarah. Any comments, questions?
Question changes in the minutes?
Thank you, Corey.
Sure. All those in favor of approving the minutes of the Credit Committee held on April 10th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I believe we have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Corey. Let's move on to next agenda item, which is recommendation for firm approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for Rosebrook Commons, which is located in Middletown.
So if I might, I just wanted to make a couple of preparatory comments, and then we'll turn it over to staff. So this is Ann Berman. So I just wanted to kind of give a quick summary of what we're going to talk about today. All of the funding actions stem from the consolidated RFP that we issued in November. And as a reminder, we received 75 applications seeking $350 million worth of gap financing. The first three actions we're going to talk about did receive supplemental funding in March, and those awards paved the way for the firm commitment recommendations today. In regard to the 9% reservations that we will present today, we received 10 applications requesting nearly $12 million in credits. So oversubscribed as usual. Based on rescissions and returns, we actually have 5.7 to allocate. Of the 10 applications received, 8 passed threshold, and the internal funding committee, which does include Chairman Orth, is recommending 5 projects for 9% credits, and we will, these recommendations do include forward allocating some credits, which is something we've done historically for the last 15 years. I also want to acknowledge the Department of Housing, who we've been working closely with. Our staff did review all of the applications and provided the Department of Housing with summaries, but I wanted to point out that the department did score the PPF and TOD requests, so they're not part of our actual recommendation approval requests. So our approvals today include standard contingencies in regard to subordinate financing, and that does include final approval of TOD and PPF, which is under the purview of the Secretary. So in total, we're recommending awards of more than $100 million to 21 projects. So And since the majority of the funding recommendations are for preliminary, obviously we'll be working with the developers over the next few months to move their projects through the due diligence as quickly as possible. Finally, I just want to thank the development staff for their efforts over the past several months. Last year, I said we undertook the biggest RFP review, but actually this year, we've never received so many applications. They did a great job, and I just wanted to thank them. So with that, I'll turn it over to Danny, who's going to talk about Rosebrook.
Thank you. This is Daniel Pollard. The project is Rosebrook Commons, and the developer is Misalala Development Corp. Request for action is for the firm commitment of up to $1.1 million of 2023, 9% low-income housing tax credit, and approval of a Rhode Island housing taxable mortgage in an amount not to exceed $3.7 million, as well as a home loan, a development of affordable housing 2 loan, and a middle-income program loan. Rosebrook Commons received the preliminary approval in May 2023. Rosebrook Commons is a proposed mixed-use, mixed-income development to be completed in two phases located in Middletown. Phase 1 is the subject of this request for action. Once complete, Phase 1 will have a total of 64 units and two buildings with approximately 21,050 square feet of ground floor commercial space, which will be a condominium and separate residential unit and financed separately. There will be a mix of 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units. 51 of these units will be low-income housing tax credit restricted, and 13 will be middle-income units with rents up to 120% of AMI. 38 units will be affordable to households earning 60% or less of AMI. 13 of the low-income housing tax credit units will be affordable to households earning up to 30% AMI and will benefit from a previously awarded HPS ELI operating subsidy. The syndicator is Boston Financial, which is offering 89 cents per credit. Citizens Bank will provide the construction loan. Since preliminary approval in May 2023, construction costs have increased significantly due to high interest rates and industry-wide increases in construction costs. The total development costs increased by approximately $5,630,000, or 25%, increasing the residential per unit cost to $421,000. To address the increase, the developer was awarded additional DAH2 and middle income funding and a 10% deferred development fee of approximately $560,000. Design and construction staff have determined that the per unit increase in construction costs is consistent with other deals in our pipeline. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Daniel. Have a motion,
please. So moved, Maria.
Thank you, Maria.
Second, Jonathan Moore.
Thanks, Jonathan. Questions? The Anthony submitted for the commercial space, you know?
Yes, it is. We recently received an LOI from our system.
Okay.
I had a question on the tax credit pricing. Is that about what we're seeing right now?
I think because it's in a proprietary fund, that's pretty consistent with what we're seeing. And I'm sorry, a multi-fund. Proprietary funds tend to be a little bit higher.
Yes, I'm sorry, Steph.
Are there any other site condition related or other precondition
forward motion activities that need to occur? No, not that I believe so. Thank you. Happy to. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for Rosebrook Commons located in Middletown? Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I think we have 5 affirmative votes. Motion's approved. Thank you.
We don't have enough.
Now move to item number 3, which is recommendation for firm approval of tax-exempt financing for Reynolds Farm Senior Housing Phase 2. And Trevor?
Trevor Kane, this request for action is for firm approval for Reynolds Farm Phase 2. We're requesting a new Rhode Island housing tax exempt construction loan in an amount not to exceed $8,750,000 and a Rhode Island housing taxable permanent first mortgage in an amount not to exceed $625,000. We're also requesting a development of affordable housing 2 loan, a housing trust fund loan, and a home investment partnerships program loan. At the March 2024 Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners meeting, Reynolds Farm 2 was awarded an additional $1 million in DHA 2. Valley Affordable Housing is the developer, and this development received preliminary approval from the Board of Commissioners in May 2023. Since that preliminary approval, plans and specifications have been completed, and construction costs have increased significantly. In addition, financing and insurance costs have increased. The syndicator on this deal is Hudson Housing Capital. They have an executed LOI at 90 cents, and the investor is Santander Bank. Reynolds Farm 2 will be new construction of 40 affordable age-restricted units in North Kingstown, and this is the second phase of a two-phase project. The first phase, Langford Estates, was 40 units as well, affordable housing financed by Rhode Island Housing, and was completed in the spring of 2021. Phase 1 is achieving 95% plus occupancy. The second phase being presented today will bring an additional 40 affordable units to the development and will complete all 80 affordable units that were to be developed. The 40 units in phase 2 will include 31 one-bedroom and 9 two-bedroom units. 11 of the units will be restricted to households with income at or below 30% AMI. The remaining 29 units will be restricted to households with income at or below 60% AMI. These 80 affordable age-restricted units in phase 1 and 2 are a crucial piece of the entire Reynolds Farm development that commenced construction in 2014. When completed, in addition to these 80 affordable units, the entire development will contain approximately 20,000 square feet of commercial space, 220 market apartments, 41 condominiums, and 200 single-family homes on over 75 acres. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Second. Thank you, John. Anyone like to jump in with a question on this one?
I'll start it off.
Trevor, one of the questions we had, I think the last time we saw this, was the level of permanent debt was relatively low. It looks like the project's been able to boost that up, hard debt, a bit, but I'm still questioning, maybe Michael, you could chime in here. How have you looked at this, and do you feel confident that it'll be able to stay above the 115 throughout the 15 years?
Yeah, we compared this pro forma with the actual operations of the existing 40 units that are there, and they're very similar. A few differences that we're working through with the developer, but for the most part, we're confident.
Okay, good, thank you.
Absolutely. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of tax-exempt financing for Reynolds Farm Senior Housing in North Kingstown, please say aye.
Aye.
The opposed say nay. And with 5 affirmative votes, then the motion is approved.
Great, thank you. Item number 4, recommendation for firm approval of financing for 80.
Addie.
Thank you. Bethune House located in Portsmouth. Seth, please take it away.
Good morning, this is Seth St. Jean. The project is at a Bethune House and a Developers Church Community Housing Corporation. The request is for firm approval for not to exceed $13.6 million tax-exempt financing with $2.93 million remaining as a permanent first mortgage. This will also be risk-shared. At a Bethune is awarded funding in the 2023 consolidated round and the 2024 consolidated round. We are also seeking firm approval for that funding, which includes CMF, DH2, home, and HTF loans. Ida Bethune is a new construction development in Portsmouth. The proposed will consist of a single building creating 54 units of affordable age-restricted housing, along with a new senior center. All 54 units will remain affordable with incomes up to 80% AMI utilizing income averaging. There are 6 units designated at 30% AMI, which will benefit from HPF ELI subsidy assistance they were previously awarded for. There will be a mix of 1 and 2 bedroom units throughout. Since preliminary approval, construction costs have increased significantly due to the industry-wide construction increases by approximately $4.3 million. To go along with the additional funding awarded the developer in March from Renown Housing, their developer was successful in receiving an additional award through the FHLB AHP funding, and they also got the LIHTC equity pricing was reduced, However, due to the property location, they were able to be now designated as a difficult to develop area, and they're able to get the 30% basis boost on the credit, so they generated quite a bit more. The syndicator is NDF and is projecting 93 cents per credit. The investor will be Webster Bank and will be the initial construction lender. There will also be a construction loan through Bank Newport to satisfy the member participation requirement from the FHLB funding. Rhode Island Housing will come in with their construction period times and bonds at approximately 50% completion and take out the Webster Bank and Bank Newport loans. Project conforms with Rhode Island Housing underwriting standards with the exception of the Part 2 of the bridge loan test, but the tax and loans and minimums to meet the 50% bond test needed for the lots of credits. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Seth. I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any comments or questions about this one?
That's okay.
Seth, could you please speak to the cost increase a little bit more? This is a very significant increase, and I don't think it could be reasonably explained away just by construction cost increases.
Yeah, and I think, one of the things that they have to deal with on this site is, post-preliminary approval, they had to get a new GC. And with that, they got new pricing and everything, and with that, the pricing came a little higher. Grand scheme of things, there was a couple things that stand out. They had to change their septic system. The water table is really high there, so they had to actually have a more advanced septic system come in, so that added a lot of costs. It's going to meet Tier 2. Stuff like that is just a little more costly of what we're seeing. I don't know, Tony, if you want to jump in on the construction cost side, if there's anything else to spit out.
Tony Fox, Director of Design and Construction. There's a few things that play to this project. The unsuitable soil run the project. A portion of our school policies that have to take down, hitting a little higher level of energy efficiency, and then subject to the community subject. That's not normal.
Okay. A discussion for another day, but maybe we should look at having more further developed specs for our application.
Yep, I think it's
identified, I think, much earlier on.
Your timing is perfect. We're starting our QAP conversations. This is Ann Berman. I think that's something we struggle with every year with some of the pre-development money that we've been awarding that might mitigate some of the next projects coming along, but it is a challenge because it's a risk for people to invest $500,000, $1 million in plans and specs and then perhaps not be funded. So.
And this is a unique time, right? We have millions of dollars that have to be spent.
Right.
So
right.
It's in our best interest to award early and push the deal.
Right. So
maybe we'll get lucky again. Right? With hundreds of millions.
Question. I know that the senior center was originally going to be purchased, I believe, by the town. So how is that being paid for now?
Yeah, so right now the developer is going to basically pay for that through construction. The town is actually going back to, again, apply for the CDBG award, so if they are successful, they'll purchase it, and then the $1 million will flow into the development, and then we will get some funding sources back.
Okay. So the contemplation, if that doesn't happen, the sources of funds, I guess that is an eligible just for these sources of funds.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, community facilities.
Okay. Okay. Great. I don't have any other questions. Any?
Of course. All those in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Addie Bethune House in Portsmouth, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With 5 affirmative votes, then the motion's approved. Thank you.
Item number 5, recommendation for approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Center City Apartments. So now we're moving into the new applicants.
Right. And the one thing I would note is 5 and 6 are essentially the same project. It's a bit of a hybrid. So if it's okay with you, Seth will talk about both, and then you can take 2 votes if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
That's fine. take it away, Seth.
Seth Finchin. Project is Center City, and the developer is One Neighborhood Builders. The deal is a hybrid 9 and 4% transaction. For the 9% project, the request for reservation of amount not to exceed $1,625,000 of 2024 and or 2025 low-income housing tax credits. And preliminary approval of CMF, OMAR, CRP, and a DH2 loan. For the 4% project, the request is for firm approval of a tax on construction financing of a not to exceed $11.6 million, with $2.3 remaining as a permanent first mortgage and also be shared. Center City Apartments is the proposed development of a blighted 3-acre site in East Providence. The 9% portion will have two buildings, one for new construction and the other is a gut rehabilitation of an existing building. The 4% will be one new construction building. The developer has partnered with Foster Board, Family Services of Rhode Island, and Crossroads to provide various supportive services with a focus on homelessness. The 9% portion will include 95 fully affordable units through income averaging, with units affordable at or below 80% of AMI. 31 of those units will be reserved for 30% of area median income. The developer has applied for HBF ELI assistance, and I believe that will be in the RFA later on. Bedroom sizes range from efficiency to three bedrooms, and the 4% deal will include 49 fully affordable units through income averaging, same thing, at or below 80% of area median income. 21 of the units will be reserved for 30% AMI, and bedroom sizes range from one to three bedrooms. Center City Apartments will utilize solar and intends to meet RMC Tier 2. All three buildings will be fully electric. This project is one of the highest scoring 9% projects during the review process. The 9% full development cost is $42.7 million, and that is $442 per unit less reserves. The 4% full development cost is $21.3 million, and that is $428,000 less reserves. The developer submitted two LOIs from syndicators at 92 cents per credit on both the 9% and the 4%. They plan on going out to bid to maximize their pricing moving forward. The project conforms with Rhode Housing underwriting standards. However, the 4% part of the project fails to pass the visual test. However, the tax loan is the amount they need to pay for 50% bond test to generate 4% credits. Happy to answer any questions.
Want to go over the 4% too, or?
He sort of did talk about the 4%.
Yeah, just kind of weaved it in. Yeah, if you need more information.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Brent, how should we
should I ask for a motion on both of these, or do you want to do them?
If we can take them separately as motions and votes, then.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Please have a motion to recommend approval of reservation.
So moved.
Thank you, Stephen.
Second.
Second. Thank you, Sarah.
And Commissioner Barry, are you recusing on this action?
Yes, I'm going to recuse.
Okay, I will note that. Thank you very much.
This is a big project. And it's been a site that's been vacant for quite a while, very visible site. It'll be cool to see that some new life brought into that and provide housing in that location. I have a question just about general design. I'm sure they've looked at this, but does it make sense to just demolish the existing, at this price point, $450,000, does it make sense maybe to just demolish and build all new?
I'm sure that they looked at all options.
Okay.
And this is the option they selected.
All right.
And it's very important that we move.
Get the money out.
Please.
Thank you.
My words exactly.
I have another question. I'm just going to jump in. Just for edification, this one's doing income averaging. I haven't done that myself yet, so not fully up to speed on it. But I see that they've the 30% AMI units are the small units, and the 2 or 3 bedroom units are 80%. Do you have to look at not only the number of units to average, but do you have to look at the square footage average?
Mike.
We don't have to. That IRS doesn't require us to.
We don't. Okay, so you can play. You can use this to kind of your advantage in the income averaging.
Right. I think we encourage dispersed units throughout the income banding, but that's okay.
And I will note that there are some. Oh, I'm sorry. There are some HPF ELI that are for two bedrooms and not just for the efficiencies in one bedroom.
Okay.
and the customers of Foster Forward, the folks that they're serving, tend to be single person households, so having the efficiency in one bedroom units is very helpful.
And Stefan, would you, I know that your department is looking at putting a significant contribution. Would you like to speak to this?
I'd like to ask Deputy Secretary Flannery to speak about it.
Okay, okay.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the projects that we're assuming will include some priority project funds. It's for the highest among us, definitely in the mix for the reasons that are called out on our scoring requirements, particularly serving low-income people. So I don't know what more to say.
Okay. Okay.
Questions about this one? Right.
And I also want to just,
sure.
I think that projects of this scale, putting our support behind them, especially when there's been such elaborate work leading up to this moment, I think it's important that we support projects that are ambitious, but by the assessment of our teams, are achievable.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on reaching this point. It's a preliminary point, but I think it's important.
And if I could, I just want to point one other thing out, that on the 4% side, there are no SFRF dollars, so we're a little less constrained in regards to sort of the timing, the challenge of the timing of getting the SFRF dollars while balancing the requirements of the bond financing, which was really something we spent a lot of time reviewing and analyzing as part of this entire RFP.
Yes, so the write-up says they're going to start simultaneously, but this is not necessarily a hybrid kind of transaction.
Correct. It could start.
Could be two standalone.
Yes.
It's going to work together.
Yes.
Okay, which gives them more flexibility.
All those in favor recommending approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Center City Apartments, the 9% project, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have four affirmative votes and one recusal, and with that, the motion is approved.
Great. Thank you. We'll now just jump to the, if I could have a motion for recommendation.
So moved.
Thank you very much, Stefan. And
Stefan. Aye.
And Corinne, would you please take a vote on this one?
Absolutely. All those in favor of recommending preliminary approval of financing for Center City Apartments in East Texas, the 4% project, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With one recusal and four affirmative votes, the motion is approved.
On action item number 7, recommendation for approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Omni Newark Apartments located in Providence. Trevor, you're going to take this one, too. Thank you.
Trevor Kane, this request for action is for Omni Newark Apartments, and it's requesting approval of 2024 and or 2025 9% low-income housing tax credits in an amount not to exceed $1,338,582, and the preliminary approval of a new Rhode Island housing taxable permanent first mortgage in an amount not to exceed $1,725,000. In addition, the request includes a home loan, a middle income loan, a community revitalization program grant, and a capital magnet fund loan. The site acquisition cost of $1.2 million was funded with a SAP grant from Rhode Island Housing in April 2022. Omni Development Corporation is the developer. Omni Newark will be new construction of a podium-style building with parking on the first floor and four floors of apartments. It's currently a vacant commercial building at 11 Newark Street in Providence. Excuse me. There will be a total of 52 units with 32 one-bedroom units and 22 bedroom units. 41 of the units, or about 80%, will be LIHTC units affordable to households with incomes at or below 60% AMI. And 11 units will be non-LIHTC units and will be targeted to residents at or below 80% AMI. The Providence Housing Authority has awarded project-based vouchers for 8 of the 30% AMI units. The remaining 3 30% AMI units have applied for HPF ELI subsidies from Rhode Island Housing. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Drew. I have a motion, please, on this one.
So moved, Jonathan Moore.
You
got
a second?
Yes.
All right.
Second.
I'd like to point out, we have a couple of these four stories over podium. This one coming in at was about $384,000 total development cost per unit, which is very reasonable relative to some others that we're seeing. So it's great to see, and only about 100,000 a unit, I think, in state soft dollars.
Mm-hmm. It's a good project.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other
questions? So is this the new Omni?
Omni Development Corp. This is
Moore. Sharon Moore. Oh, Sharon. Okay.
Yeah.
The Providence-based Omni.
Yes, not the.
I know
they were coming
back with something new.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, okay, got it.
Questions?
All those in favor of recommending approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Omni Newark Apartments in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With a unanimous vote, the motion is approved.
Thank you. You're blazing along. Number eight, recommendation for approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing parcel line phase two located in Providence. Seth?
Yes.
This is Seth Finchin. The project is parcel line phase two and the developer is Penrose LLC. The request is for reservation of amount not to exceed $1 million of 2024 and or 2025 low-income housing tax credits. Preliminary approval of a DH2 home HTF and acquisition revitalization fund loan. Currently, Rhode Island Housing is not protected as a senior lender. Parcel 9 phase 2 is a new construction mixed-use income development on a vacant parcel near the Fox Point neighborhood in Providence. This is the second phase of the planned two-phase development. Phase 1 is currently under construction and is approximately 50% complete. Phase 2 will include 61 units, of which 36 will be affordable to AMIs ranging from 30% to 50% AMI income, and 13 at 100% AMI, and 12 will exceed 120% AMI. 13 of the units will be reserved for 30% of AMI income, and the developer has applied for HPF ELI assistance, and has also been awarded 8 project-based vouchers from Providence Housing Authority. During this is phase one, Penrose is partnering with Operation Stand Down to provide services for qualified veterans living in a development. Parcel 9-1 will utilize solar and tends to follow the zero energy home standard and meet RFP Tier 2 and Energy Star 3.1. Current total development cost is $30.9 million or $488,000 less reserves. The developer submitted LOIs from 2 syndicators at 90 cents per credit. They plan on going up to bid to maximize the pricing. Project conforms with Brown Housing Underwriting Standards, and happy to answer any questions.
So moved. Thank you, Stephen.
Second.
Thank you, Sarah. Great. Comment? Yes, Stephen.
Just a general question. How has phase one gone?
It's going smoothly. I mean, Tony is on the job meetings on a monthly basis, so you can probably jump in.
Yeah, they're moving on very efficiently. Hopefully.
The answer to your question is correct. There's no subsidy specific to the 100 or 120% units.
Okay. I can't readily add up all these lines in my head, but it looks like it's over maybe $18 million, and we're about getting 36 affordable units.
Yeah, it's about $511,000 per unit on the affordable side for subsidy.
Awful lot amount of subsidy for. We don't have any cap though on
subsidy for affordable units?
We do not.
That's an evergreen statement, yes, for each one of these.
I guess the union time right now, I don't think we're going to have this going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we're going to have to be very careful about the amount of money that we're subsidizing affordable units. This is a great project. I think it's a fantastic project, but I'm concerned about the money. Essentially, that we're subsidizing these market units. Any comments, sir?
I think the income is great. I just wanted to see what you're seeing for experience with projects that are like this that have a lot of different incomes. I know we see them all over the country, so in common, I just haven't seen them.
I would defer to Mike from an asset management perspective.
I think obviously the higher units help support some of the lower units. We're always looking at rents and making sure that folks aren't being burdened and then supporting those market rate units. So for the most part, those properties have been
performed. Okay, so no issues with lease up?
No.
Okay.
And we haven't seen any management challenges or anything thus far. Okay. That's been positive.
Great, thank you.
Further comments or questions? Hearing none, take vote.
Yes, and I'll note Commissioner Berry's indicated her intent to recuse. All those in favor of recommending approval of a reservation of joint housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Parcel 9, Phase 2, project located in Providence, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. We have 4 affirmative votes. And the motion is approved.
Thank you very much, Court. All right. 9, recommendation for approval of reservations of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for 321 Knight Street. Take it away.
This request for action is for approval for 2024 and or 2025 9% low-income housing tax credits in an amount not to exceed $1,290,000. And also preliminary approval of a new Rhode Island housing taxable permanent first mortgage in an amount not to exceed $1,100,000. In addition, an acquisition revitalization program loan, capital magnet fund loan, a home investment partnership program loan, and a community revitalization program grant are requested. SWAP Incorporated, Stop Wasting Abandoned Properties, is the developer. 321 Knight Street will be 100% affordable and will be new construction of a podium-style building with parking on the ground floor and 4 floors with 41 apartments above. It's now a vacant, blighted location in Providence. The focus will be on families and for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. This is 100% affordable project with 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units ranging from 30% to 80% AMI. The 9 units at 30% AMI will be receiving HBF ELI subsidy, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks very much, Trevor. Thank you, Maria.
Second, Jonathan.
One more. Thank you, Jonathan. Question about this one?
If this project was originally slated to be a market deal years ago, so it's going through the approvals process,
is that correct?
It is fully permitted.
It is fully.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it will be fully permitted by the end of this year. So it is.
Okay, so it's moving along.
Yes.
Okay. No other comments or questions?
Yes, happy to. All those in favor of recommending approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for 321 Knight Street located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. 5 affirmative votes and the motion is approved.
All right. Number 10, recommendation for revised approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for the Villages at Manville located in Lincoln.
That's me. Yes, I am. Good morning. This is Ann Berman. So this is a request for a reservation of 2024 or 2025 9% credits in an amount not to exceed $1,344,000, as well as revised preliminary approval of first mortgage of about $3.7 million, home loan, housing trust phone loan, Rhode Island rebounds loans, DAH2, and middle income. This is a project known as The Villages at Manville, or for simplicity, TVM. Dakota Properties is the developer. This project has been before the board a couple of times. It did receive an allocation of 2022 9% credits, as well as some gap financing. So this RFA actually seeks approval of a revised reservation of LIHTC and revised preliminary approval. When completed, TVM will have 72 units of housing, 57 will be LIHTC restricted, and the remaining 15 will be for households up to 80% of AMI. This transaction was moving to closing in the second quarter of 2023 when the development lost its syndicator due to the demise of Signature Bank. This set the developer and the development back, and the delay has resulted in higher construction pricing, lower syndication pricing, and changes at the corporate level. Dakota recently closed on a corporate financial restructuring, which involves winding down their in-house construction team. They have engaged Campanelli Construction out of Braintree, Massachusetts, as a third-party general contractor. In addition to sort of overall construction price increases that we've talked about, the engagement of a third-party construction firm has resulted in increased construction costs. Since 2022, when the project first received preliminary approval, the overall costs have increased about $5.6 million, which, quite honestly, isn't inconsistent with other projects we've talked about today. The initial preliminary approval included a reservation of 2022 credits, which would require that the project meet its place in service date by the end of 2024, which obviously is not feasible. So we're recommending the rescission and reallocation of these new tax credits so that they can meet the and will reset the place in service deadline. As part of its review of the 2024 LIHTC funding round, the funding committee did look at this project, and they did approve the rescission and reallocation of the LIHTC. Plans and specs are permit ready. However, due to the stalled development process, obviously some of the due diligence needs to be updated. They need to finalize their syndication pricing. We are hopeful we'll be able to we'll keep you posted. So there's no deviations from standard underwriting, and the cost per unit is actually still quite reasonable at $359,000 per unit. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Is there questions about this transaction? Could you go over just briefly, and this is a little bit unusual to, you know, to have to rescind credits and then reallocate necessarily to this developer or the teeth we have in them going forward to try to make sure that they perform?
Well, if you recall that they actually had two projects, we've actually fully rescinded the credits on one of those projects and rescinded both the credits and all of the funding allocations, so I think that was a pretty significant penalty.
Okay.
It allows them to focus on this deal.
Yeah.
Take one at a time, move it across the finish line, and then we can
yeah.
revisit the Westerly project.
Right.
This one is very far along.
Yes.
Yes.
And they are ready to go.
This was the horse to back, yeah.
Okay.
I have one other question. Ties back to my earlier question. In a case like this where we have some non-LIHTC units, so prices could vary. Do they also have some kind of amenities? Because I'm just thinking, like, someone who's not in a LIHTC building is going to, you know, be looking around a lot of places, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, how do they ensure bring in, you know, people that can get comparable amenities.
Right. So Dakota has kind of a sort of a typical MO, and they do their residential buildings. Then they have a community building, which has a gym facility in it and some common space. I will say that originally these were going to be market rate units, but working with the town, they were able to secure the some additional financing from the town and the 8% real estate assessment on all of the units, so all of the units are at 80%. That's why they ended up this way.
Okay. All right. So they still have, like, non-Line Tech 80%, but they're going to keep them at 80%.
Yes.
That's great. Okay. Thank
and
you.
They do operate another development in Lincoln already, so they're familiar with the market and demand.
Great community. Yeah. And the community is just a great
yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Any comments or questions? Hearing none. Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Of course. All those in favor of recommending revised approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of finance for the Villages at Manville located in Lincoln, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With 5 votes in favor, the motion's approved.
I move on to agenda item number 11, which is the application for preliminary approval of financing for final phase 5.
Final phase 5, yes. This will be Seth.
Seth, please.
This is Seth Angie. The project is Parcel 5 and the developer is the Housing Authority of the City of Newport. The request is for a not to exceed $12.3 million in tax and bonds with $2.313 million remaining as a current first mortgage, and it will be reshared. Other funding requested for preliminary approval is the home loans, CMF, and HCF. Parcel 5 is the fifth and final phase of the five-phase redevelopment that basically takes, you know, the existing 262 units and does a one-for-one replacement, which is also a requirement of our QAD in Newport. This proposed phase includes the demolition of 20 units contained in 7 buildings and a new construction of 45 units in 3 buildings. Phase 4 is currently under construction, and they're moving along with the demo currently. They're about 60% complete with the demo, and they're, you know, just kind of starting the early stages of the development process. Phase 5 will be fully affordable with 45 units out of the lowest 60% of the AMI with a mix of 1 to 4 bedrooms. 38 units will have project-based vouchers, where the remaining 7 will have an annual contribution to contract subsidy. Boston Financial will be the syndicator, and their investor is Citizens Bank, which has been consistent on all the other phases. Citizens will be the initial construction lender, and Rhode Island Housing Tax and Bonds will be issued at approximately 50% completion. The developer was also previously awarded $6.75 million in public housing authority funds in November 2023. The vacant wage rates will be required on this deal, and the current total going to cost is $24.7 million, or $526,000 per unit less reserves. The project conforms with Rhode Island Housing Underwriting Standards, with the exception of the Part 2 as a bridge loan test. However, the tax and loan size meets the 50% bottom test. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, sir. I have a motion to approve this one.
So moved. Maria Berry.
Thank you, Maria.
Second, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Comments or questions
about this one? I feel like this is 10 years, something like that, ish?
Probably close,
yeah. Yeah, that'll be great to see.
Time flies.
Looks great. That's terrific.
I have a, this is a general question about this structure of the primary investor being also the construction lender, which I know is fairly common, but this is a little bit of a new twist. We're seeing it more doing up to the 50% construction point that we come in. Are there... I'm curious to know, are there any performance threshold items there for that before we step in, and how much equity are they going to have in the deal at that point, fully out as the construction lender?
So presumably, so similar to if we were the initial construction lender, our team is out there on day one, so we're monitoring all the construction and approving requisitions in conjunction with Citizens. So obviously, if things were not going well, we would not be, you know, we'd have to have a conversation about when the bonds come in. In terms of the...
So I'm sorry, can I, so So there's something written in the agreements that...
We have an intercreditor agreement.
Uses have to be lined up,
yeah.
Take over.
Right, and there's an intercreditor agreement which outlines the relationship between all the lenders. Presumably, there's still only 15% or whatever the initial syndication in, but the good news is we're 50% complete, which means we're well out of the ground, and our team is well aware of any, you know, sort of potential pitfalls at that point. In some ways, I think it's it reduces our risk pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. No, I think I'm saying for all the phases, I believe the total costs are very high for this.
Yep.
I know it includes undergrounding of utilities. I think Davis-Bacon. There's it's just the nature of the beast, I guess, with the housing authority, the way they have to, you know, go about their development with this. I do see that they're contributing, I think, what is it, over $1 million themselves.
And there's relocation involved.
There's
well,
relocation. Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's driving costs when you think about the cost of a unit, right, a relocation
right.
unit.
Right. Anything else, Tony, that you'd like to add?
The reason of the building is environmental condition of the building, soil condition, and the modern and new water, all these options you've got to deal with are bad when you get to the top of the hill. And the building is bad. So that's not the condition.
Okay. Right. Okay.
What's the tax credit price on this?
The top of my head, I have too many bills to keep track of.
No.
But I think it was right around 19 cents.
Okay. Right, Marie, your mic. Thank you.
Comments or questions about this transaction? Right, correct. Please take a vote.
Mm-hmm. All those in favor of recommending preliminary approval of financing for Park Home Phase 5 in Newport, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I think we have 5 votes in favor. Thank you.
Thank you. On to item number 12, which is recommendation for approval of middle income loans. Program funding awards.
I will take this one. Yes. Good morning. This is Ann Berman. So Middle Income Loan Fund is funded with the state and local fiscal recovery funds. It is earmarked for production of housing for households with incomes between 80 and 120% of AMI. The MI program is available for both rental and home ownership. And prior to the issuance of the RFP, there was approximately $13.8 million available to disperse. In March of this year, the board approved just over 682,000 of additional MI units for 2 projects with 45 middle-income units. In total, we received 24 proposals requesting about $24 million of middle-income funds. And one of the key program requirements is that 20% of the units in the development have to provide housing for households with incomes below 100% AMI. We are recommending approval of funding for 8 developments with just over $11.3 million in recommendations. This will support 591 units, of which 147 will be deed restricted as middle income. So I'm going to buzz through the first couple because we've already talked about them, and then I'll spend a little bit more time talking about the remainder. So the first project is Omni Newark. We previously presented that one, and we are recommending a middle-income award of $985,000 for 11 units. The village is at Manville, which we just talked about, a small middle-income award of 214,730 units. The next one is 1625 Lonsdale, or often referred to as Lonsdale Memorial Lofts. It is a joint venture. It's being developed by a joint venture between Valley Affordable Housing and Lonsdale Memorial Holdings. It's the proposed residential redevelopment of the former Lincoln Memorial School. It will contain 26 new units, all of which will be at 80% of area median income. It will consist of studio, one-bedroom, and three-bedroom units. All of the units are currently identified, as I said, at 80% AMI. This development is also being recommended simultaneously for an ARP, an Acquisition and Revitalization Program Award. And this middle-income award of $2,230,000 is contingent upon completion of standard underwriting and closing by the end of the year. The next one is Good Homes in Warwick, which is the conversion of the former Sheridan Hotel on the Post Road into multifamily housing with 238 units, ranging from 80 to 120% of the units. There'll be 211 studios and 27 one-bedrooms. Our middle income is geared to the one-bedroom units, which meets the size requirements of the program, and we're recommending an award of $2,295,000 in middle income. Clearview Apartments is the next one. It is a proposed 31-unit development in Central Falls, located on Broad Street. This project is actually 70% complete. It's under construction. It's currently funded with partner equity, and the original plan was to create all market rate units. They're now proposing 19 middle income units, and we're recommending an award of $1,485,000. The next one is Postal Apartments. It is the conversion of post office in Providence in Olneyville Square into 12 residential units, four of which will be middle income. There'll also be about 2,000 square feet of commercial space in the building. We're recommending an award of $390,000 for this project. The next one is Old County Village. This is a condominium development that's being developed in Smithfield. In total, there'll be 79 condo units. We previously provided a HIF award where the developer successfully developed and sold five affordable home ownership units. This middle income award will support 15 additional four-bedroom condominiums for households at 100% of AMI, and we are recommending $1,425,000. The last one is Dexter Street Commons, which is being developed by Lee Pizer. It's the new construction of a mixed-use development at the former Connaught Thread Factory in Pawtucket. It's located very close to the new train station. There will be 150 rental units. We are recommending a middle-income award for 30 units. There are proposed sources and uses, which has a placeholder for some gap financing that is needed to complete the capital stack. And this RFA includes $2,320,000 of middle income funds, again, to create 30 deed restricted units. So in total, we're seeking approval of $11,344,730 of middle income funds for 8 developments. Happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Tax credit, non-tax credit.
Yep.
Geographic distribution.
Private investment.
Private investment, yes. Yeah. Really pulling in some new players.
Yes.
Really nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Second, Jonathan Moore. Thank you so much.
Comments or questions about the program at large or any of the individual projects?
I'll throw out the
Good Home Forward
project. Nice to see the conversion of the hotel.
Yeah.
Should provide a lot of housing, obviously. And, presumably won't need to do that much to get them up to
No, I think you said it was 70% done already. Yeah.
Oh, that's a different one.
Yeah.
That was it. That's
yeah.
Good homes.
I mean, to get that permitted and move that along, the city's
okay.
Very happy.
About
yeah.
No debt on that project? Some of the equity into debt once they get a little.
There is going to be debt, but we are not providing it.
I'm sure. My whole paper. Yes, they do. She'll rent.
But you're good with the feasibility of this, Michael. But okay. I don't have any other comments.
I have one. Can you just give in what we're hearing with the increasing costs and challenges? It's a lot of deals. Do we feel pretty good that we've nailed down the cost of coming back?
This is a great question. We are not the senior lender on at this point, we're not anticipated to be the senior lender on most of those deals. We are in conversations with the folks at 1624 Lonsdale about potentially being the lender. A couple of them are under construction, and I think, quite honestly, they never had any intention of creating affordable units, but basically ran into cost increases and now are seeing this as an opportunity to finish their project. Lucky us, we get to benefit from their misfortune, I suppose. But I think these developers will not be coming back for more. We'll make it quite clear that they can't, and they'll have to fill any additional holes with sponsor equity.
Okay. And these are existing properties, right? We're not digging up, right? So it's not like some of the 9% deals where we're in the ground, we're finding unsuitable soils and have all of that to deal with. So I think Ann is correct in that these are moving. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky that we're able to insert ability into deals we wouldn't otherwise be in.
Okay. So it sounds like we're helping to create more affordable units, also helping the project, but that in most cases, if they had an issue, they would go somewhere else for the money, not come back.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions? Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Yes, happy to. All those in favor of recommending approval of Middle Income Loan Program funding awards as presented at this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. 5 votes in favor, the motion's approved.
Now move on to item number 14, which is recommendation for approval of acquisition and revitalization program funding awards.
Oh, we got capital magnet.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
No.
Item number 13, approval of capital magnet fund.
I will take this one.
Dean, you'll present this.
Thank you. This is Dean Harrison. Rhode Island has received 4 capital magnet grants over the last few years. The most recent award was $12 million. The program has specific priorities for ELI and VLI, which is extremely low income and very low income units, and the development needs to be in a QCT, which limits the number of projects that may be eligible for the CMM funds. Rhode Island Housing received 14 proposals requesting $11,593,000 in CMS funding. We are proposing funding for allowing 6 projects, 4 which have reviewed as part of the other presentation, so I'll just give you the amounts. Center City Apartments, for the 9% transaction, $999,000. Omni Newark, $775,000. 21 Knight Street, $500,000. Park Home 5, $999,000. And the new that the funding is going to, we have Lockwood Plaza Phase 2. Lockwood Plaza Phase 2, which is being developed by Wind Companies, LLC, consists of a 6-story apartment building with 104 one- and two-bedroom flat-style units. Phase 2 proposes to complete the renovations of the master site by rehabbing the 6-story mid-rise building. In addition to the site's 104 rental units, Lockwood Plaza Phase 2 will include a community room,
kitchen, management office, laundry facilities, and 130-word surface parking spaces. This is 100% affordable community with rents at 50 and 60% of AMI. This $999,000 CMM award constitutes partial funding of the project, continuing upon completion of the standard underwriting within 9 months of this award and closing within 12 months of the award. The other development that received is receiving the CMF, is Newport Heights Phase 1. Newport Heights Phase 1, which is being developed by Trinity Financial, Inc., is the proposed recapitalization of 81 units originally developed as a LIHTC transaction in 2001. This proposed transaction will utilize a RAD conversion of the existing ACC rents, and the developer has received a to enter into a housing assistance payment app from HUD for the conversion. 67 of the units are affordable to households below 60% of AMI. The balance are unrestricted. This community capital magnet fund award constitutes partial funding for the project, contingent on completion of the standard underwriting within 9 months of this award and closing 12 months of the award. In summary, we are requesting approval of $5,271,000 of community magnet funds, capital magnet funds, for six projects with 418 units, of which 404 are capital magnet funds qualified. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Stan. Thank you, Sarah.
Second,
Jonathan. Could you just refresh us about the income and rent requirements on a capital magnet fund?
Sure. So it was a very competitive grant, and basically, at a minimum, 20% of the units have to be below 50% AMI. However, under our application, basically 40% of the units have to be below 50% of AMI, with some of them below 30% AMI.
Okay. So does every development have to have some units below 30, or we just have to make sure that our whole...
The whole...
Right, out of the aggregate. So so we have, you know, quite the large spreadsheet where we're sort of constantly tracking it over each project. At a minimum, every project has to hit the 20% below 50%. But on most projects, we're at 50 or 60, you know, probably 50% of the units are below 50% of AMI. It does not work for every project. There's all sorts of leveraging requirements as well.
It is a great program, though.
Yeah.
You were one of the first agents to jump in. So we thank Senator Reed for his creation of this program. So, and we'll continue to go after it, even though it's a huge list. We're going after it.
We're going after the next one. We just...
Yeah. We've got to take a breath, and then we're going after the next one. Yeah.
Comments or questions?
Well, I think Emma and I recuse myself from these awards because the deals I recuse myself from are interesting.
Okay, for the record, that was Maria Berry. Thank you.
Happy to. All those in favor of recommending approval of capital magnet fund awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. We have four ayes, and with that, the motion is approved. Thanks.
So we'll now move on to the acquisition and revitalization program fund awards.
And Lauren's going to present this.
Good morning. This is Lauren Farley. In 2021, we voted to approve the $55 million housing bond. $15 million of those funds are designated for the properties that are blighted or the revitalization of the acquisition and revitalization program. And our purpose is to stabilize neighborhoods and communities by strategically targeting foreclosed or blighted residential and commercial properties or vacant lots in need of redevelopment. This redevelopment revitalizes neighborhoods and improves local economy. Our funds were included in the latest consolidated RFP issued in November. In response, we received 18 proposals requesting about $17 million in off funds. Two of the applications were for commercial development and 16 were residential. There is approximately $7.2 million of ARP funds available, and these the recommended awards will directly fund 6 commercial units and 116 residential units. The recommendations are Hope and Main, West End Kitchen, and Providence. Hope and Main, West End Kitchen is being developed by Hope and Main. It's a culinary incubator. It's a 20,000 square foot campus comprised of two adjacent properties, 945 and 949 Westminster Street. They share a party wall. The site will provide 6 shared use kitchens and infrastructure for specialized food production, including baking, meal prep, catering, consumer packaged goods. And the site will provide opportunities for businesses that are ready to transition out of a very successful Hope and Main building in Warren, but they can't find affordable production space for filled out or lease. The sponsors of the project are tackling it with a phased approach. ARP funding in $2 million is being recommended to fund the cost of stabilization and code upgrades for 945 Westminster. That includes envelope upgrades, ADA compliance, fire alarms, roof and masonry upgrades, and utility sub-ins. And also the Washington Bridge closure created severe logistical challenges for a large cohort of the businesses whose founders reside in Providence. So it really necessitates an urgent need to redevelop the Providence facility quickly. The next projects are residential, and you've heard about them previously. It's 321 Knight Street, the tax credit deal, and $1.46 million is being recommended in Austin. And there's Parcel 9, Phase 2, also previously presented, and we're recommending $1.75 million in Austin. And final residential property is 1624 Lonsdale. Dean spoke about it earlier, just to give you a low-income award, and we are recommending $2 million. In summary, it'll be
$7.215
million.
Great, thank you very much. So moved. Second.
Second.
Thank you, sir. Comments or questions about this action item? I'd like to point out the Hope and Main. I've gotten a lot of new culinary items from the network, so happy to have them maybe a little to explore. And just the proximity to Johnson & Wales, I think it's fantastic to be some synergy there. I'm not a commercial developer, so I don't know what it costs to build commercial kitchen space out, but $600 a square foot, Tony, is that reasonable?
I have to look it up myself.
Okay.
A lot of fire suppression issues.
Okay. All right. Good. Comments or questions?
Okay. All those in favor of recommending approval of acquisition and revitalization program funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
The opposed say nay. With a unanimous vote, the motion is approved.
And I'm with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'll restate that. We have one recusal, who's Commissioner Barry, and we have 4 affirmative votes. Thank you.
Agenda item number 15, recommendation for approval of housing production fund.
House Dean. This is Dean Harrison. The Housing Production Fund, also known as HPF, was established by the state for planning and production of affordable housing for households. It is funded by the real estate transfer tax and was initially seeded by the legislature with a $25 million. The funding source was not included in the RFP, but while all the production dollars under the program was previously committed in previous funding rounds, following the issuance of the RFP funds, we rescinded and or returned because of other non-Rhode Island housing sources was committed. The threshold criteria in scoring was the same as for the Development of Affordable Housing 2 program. These funds were added to the pool of funds available in this RFP. Each of the commitment is subject to Rhode Island Housing Standard underwriting and completion of all the full capital stacks. Collectively, this funding will create 73 new housing units of housing, of which 45 are for households below 80% and 16 which serve households below 30% AMI. For the projects that receive funding, Parcel 9, Phase 2, which was previously presented, is being recommended for $2,286,306 to support 36 units. 23 Central Street, which is being developed by Pawtucket Central Falls Development Corporation, is the new construction of 12 affordable rental units ranging from 30% to 80% AMI on two blighted properties in Central Falls. The 30% units will be for three adults who have aged out of foster care and may be experiencing homelessness. Foster Forest has committed operating subsidies for these three units and will provide supportive services. 23 Central Street is adjacent to a new construction PCFDC is undertaking as part of a recently approved 9% transaction. This development is simultaneously being recommended for an award of Acquisition Revitalization Program, OP funds. In addition to any other conditions in the RFA requesting approval of such OP awards, this $2,218.75 of HPF award is contingent upon completion of the capital stack, including firm commitment of the first mortgage financing as well as completion of the standard underwriting within 6 months of this award and closing with 9 months of this award. In summary, the two proposals seeking program resources in the amount of $4,504,881,000 are being recommended for HPF approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dean. Motion for this item, please.
So moved, John.
John. Sarah? Any comments or questions, Bob?
Comment, if I may.
Yes.
We had the opportunity to attend an event on Central Street. This development, the two developments, is going to change this neighborhood. Really is going to make a difference. This very old area of the city.
Remind us, is this for 80% or less AMI?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, 80%.
And this is, the legislature was generous enough to pre-fund kind of this program, I should say, with $10 million. How much, and I know this varies, but how much we're kind of seeing in new resources coming in?
I don't know that we have that dollar amount, do we, available?
I believe that's with the Department of Housing at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments or questions about this one?
I'm recusing myself. Okay. For the record, Commissioner Barry is recusing herself. Are you ready for a vote?
Yes, please.
Okay. All those in favor of recommending approval of Housing Production Fund funding awards as presented at this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
We have 4 votes in favor. The motion is approved. Thank you.
So now to agenda item number 16, which is the recommendation for approval of Housing Production Fund Extremely Low Income Operating Reserve, HPF ELI.
Mike is going to present it.
Requesting approval of Housing Production Fund Extremely Low Income, or HPF-ELI, Operating Reserve Award. Housing Production Fund specifically established a priority for households either entering homelessness or earning not more than 30% of median income. The fund will bridge the gap between residents' ability to gain 30% of their gross household income toward rent and establish 50% low-income housing tax credit rights for the applicable unit size. There's approximately $3.7 million of HPF-ELI funding available to the board. In November of 2023, Rhode Island Housing issued a request for proposal for the HPF-ELI fund as part of the consolidated funding round. In response, we received 18 proposals, investing more than $15 million in HPF-ELI funds. Staff and development as a consultant review applications in accordance with the published program review criteria. $3,780,840 and will support 54 Four of the transactions received from the HBFDLI funds are to be funded with low income housing tax credits, and have been discussed earlier, so I'll quickly summarize those proposals. The first is Omni Village, proposing 3 units at 37 AMI, supported for 15 years, which contributes to an award of $243,287. 321 Knight Street, 9 units for $729,862. Center Street Apartments, 10 units, $859,742. And Parcel Line Phase 2, which is 13 units, for $1,535,963. The remaining HBFDLI funds are being allocated, proposed to be allocated to Crossroads Health and Housing. It's a property being developed by Crossroads. The proposed demolition of the existing structure at 371 Pine Street in Providence, and the subsequent new construction of a 5-story mixed-use building on site. Ground floor will feature common space for residents, offices for Crossroads, Rhode Island, releasing a special service staff, and 2,900 square feet of commercial space, which will be leased to community partners with an emphasis on health and wellness. The office floors will have a mix of 16 efficiency and 19 one-bedroom apartments. The development is designed to address both housing and help their needs of people experiencing homelessness. Only rooms will be restricted for households or main homes at or below 80% of AMI. So we are recommending allocating the remaining funds of $411,986 to support 19 residential units.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come on, Maria.
Please, the Crossroads. I see that it's only for 5 years.
They're very successful through the continuum care program. I imagine they're contemplating rental assistance under the continuum. To support the development.
So this isn't going to lose by hanging your confidence at this?
Well, it would be hanging us, that's what.
Comments or questions about this item? Okay, Corey, would you please?
Yes, and noting a recusal by Commissioner Barry. All those in favor of recommending approval of Housing Production Fund Extremely Low Income Operating Reserve Awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 4 votes in favor, and the motion is approved.
Agenda item number 17, recommendation for approval of transfer of fiscal assets to departments located in Providence.
I'll take that one. Thank you. Dean Harrison again. This request for action is an administrative action required under our general rules governing multifamily loan programs. This request for action is for approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Adelaide Apartments. Adelaide Apartments is a 36-unit affordable housing development located in Providence. The owner of the development is Adelaide Avenue Limited Partnership. Adelaide Avenue Development Corp., a Rhode Island corporation, holds a 0.01% interest in the partnership. Oneyville Housing Corporation, doing business as One Neighborhood Builders, is a special limited partner of the limited partnership, which holds a 0.01% interest. The current invested limited partners is Housing Outreach Fund 9 LP, which holds 99.98% limited partnership interest. They intend to withdraw and transfer its partnership interest to Oneyville Housing Corp., doing business as 1NB. 1NB is the sole shareholder of the general partner. 1NB will assume all existing obligations covering the development. The initial compliance period ended in 2018. The current property manager is Peabody Properties, Inc., out of Massachusetts. The owner and the management companies are not affiliated entities, and no change in the management agent is contemplated. We are requesting approval of the following: the transfer of the limited partnership interest in the development. Happy to answer any questions.
Question two. Second, Jonathan. Comments or questions about this? Great. Hearing none?
Okay. All those in favor of recommending approval of a transfer of assets for Adelaide Apartments located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you.
Finish line.
Item number 18 is recommendation for 700 Vickery Highway located in West Greenwich. Development Corporation.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
That's me. Yeah. So I will try my very best to make a long story short here. This property is 59 acres located right off Route 102 in West Greenwich. It was acquired by the Rhode Island Housing Land Bank in October 2002. That is the correct date. Shortly thereafter, Swap Inc. was designated as the developer as per the land bank process. Despite Swap's best efforts over the intervening two decades, there was significant opposition at the town level and with the immediate abutters to any development getting done. We had conversations with Swap about a year and a half ago saying, you know, I think this has run its course. They were happy to say we can't keep banging our head against the wall. And so not only did they agree to let us take it back into the land bank, but also provided some of the product they had generated over the years for us to use in an RFP to issue, you know, hopefully select a new developer who might be able to get past. At simultaneous to that, we started an engagement process with the town of West Greenwich with the current leadership and found that they were more receptive to development happening there than ever before. They were a very good partner, I think, not in small part due to some of the legislative changes that happened at the state level and folks realizing, you know, we're going to have to do some development here and let's do it with an eye towards what will work for the town, which was great, and they've been a good partner thus far in this process. So this past October of 2023, we issued an RFP for developers, received three responses. Those were reviewed by an internal staff committee, and all the developers were interviewed so that they could outline their vision for the project and, you know, really get a deep sense of what they were trying to do. We also, as per our engagement process with the town, shared those applications with the town to get their feedback and met with them, just kind of walk them through each one and see where they fell on things and what they thought was in the best interest of the town as well, which was really, really, really very helpful. As a result of this process, we're very happy to recommend Women's Development Corporation as the developer. They've done a lot of very similar projects in rural areas of the state, which I think was a big plus for the town, certainly, that they're able to see some of the things that they had done in the general area. It's for 44 units of rental housing, 4 one-bedrooms, 16 two-bedrooms, 24 three-bedrooms. 11 of those will be available to rent at 30% AMI, 20 at 60%, and 13 at 80%. That is where we are now. The next steps would be there's a 12-month process that Women's Development has to assemble its funding, take it out of the land bank, and begin the development process. But Women's Development, in our conversation, is very excited to start this, and we're very excited to see a new chapter start for 700 Vickery Highway in West Greenwich, and thankful to all the town and all the other folks who participated and Swap helping to get this back up and running. So, great. Happy to answer any questions.
James.
Okay. She's on it.
Second. Second, great. We
thank you, Sarah.
I noticed, James, that in condition is that real estate needs to close and all financing must close within 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
This is for 22 years.
So the land bank requires that we close the land bank in 12 months. I would also say that you know, historically we have been able to get extensions to that if circumstances dictate. I know this is at the top of the list for women's development, and they're, you know, trying to block out time for a contractor and architect to get work moving right away. So I would anticipate we will see applications from them for funding in the next round of funding that we do. If not, if we're able to make some, you know, if there are any pre-development resources made available by us or by the state, I'm sure they'll go after that as well to make this happen.
They have some nice designs for rural.
They do. They've done good things in Richmond, Charlestown, Exeter. It's the same project team, you know, as far as the design group. So, and I think that was a big selling point, obviously, for the town, who actually took a bus tour to those sites to get comfortable with the idea of rental housing in a rural community. It was something that's pretty new in West Greenwich, certainly. So it was a really good process, and we feel very comfortable about going forward with this.
I have a question. How common is it to have an acquisition of this age?
I would say this is our oldest graduate of the land bank by a significant amount. It is not. That is why. So a couple things. That is why we have the 12 months in there now, which I don't believe may have existed 22 years ago. But also, you know, it's something that we changed the model of the land bank from Rhode Island Housing acquiring and holding property to making it a bridge loan to the developer, because it puts a little bit more of the onus on the developer to act quickly rather than, oh, for Rhode Island Housing, you're just holding it and paying the taxes and insurance, you know, it's less urgent, I feel like. So we've made adjustments in the program over the years to make sure that we don't have another double-decade holding. I feel pretty good about that.
The purpose of this, though, was to save a mobile home park.
Yeah.
Allow the owners of the mobile home park to be able to purchase it. That's the reason we bought it. Not because we're in the business of speculating.
Yeah. Do you have any other properties that are like, I don't know, like over 10? Just like,
no. I believe not anymore.
No. No, we really have done a good job of partnering up with good developers to get all the stuff out of the land bank. And again, our model now is more of a bridge loan to get that done. So, yeah, I don't think you'll see another one that's, at least we won't be around once they go for 20 years.
Yes, happy to. Sure, vote. All those in favor of recommending approval of a developer, namely Women's Development Corporation, for 700 Victory Highway in West Greenwich, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With 5 yays, we have a motion that is approved. Thank you.
Fantastic. 18 items in a little over an hour and a half. We'll now move to discussion and consultation, the Priority Projects Fund and the Transit Orient Program at the Department of Housing. And I'd like to lead the discussion with that stuff.
I'll just do the brief introductions. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As you know, Chair Orth, the department have within the jurisdiction of the department two funds, the Private Projects Fund and the Transportation-Oriented Development Fund, PPF and TOD. Those two funds are slated for some commitments and ultimate disbursements. In the course of considering how to conduct both the analysis and the decision-making to form a partnership with the department, in this instance with Rhode Island Housing, I'm going to ask Deputy Secretary Flannery to explain all the rest. And by the way, thank you very much for offering a seat at the table. She has joined you at multiple tables to enable this, and we're very grateful for that collaborative process. Obviously, these funds, as you've witnessed, as you've now participated in, are interwoven into these various developments and deals. And what we wanted to do was ensure that the credit committee had a role prior to our final determination, prior to our actual decision at the department. So in our contractual arrangement with Rhode Island Housing, the department with Rhode Island Housing, there is a formal role for advisement on these tentative decisions prior to the full determination. So that's where we stand, and over to the Deputy Secretary with my gratitude.
Thank you. And thank you to the committee for providing this opportunity to speak and to hear what we've worked on. So I would just want to start by saying thank you to Carol and James and
Anne and the whole Rhode Island Housing team. This was the first time we've done a joint effort along these lines, and I really just have appreciated how accommodating and supportive you all have been in that process. A lot of the work actually is being done here because, as we say, we have a memo here. I should have mentioned at the table that was placed for all of the committee members outlining this, but we have we started this process back in November with the RFP, where the department actually furnished the scoring criteria and the program overview and the funding availability notice to the agency to have it published with the right, with all these other sources. But there is also now a contract agreement between Rhode Island Housing and the department, and that provides for really all the technical work and the back-end processing of the loans and the making of the funding awards later to the staff of Rhode Island Housing, but for this one nuance where the department makes the decision. So we have to work very closely together to sort of team this together, and there's been a lot of process engineering going on. So just appreciate working through all these things with us. So what you have at your packet is a memo just sort of outlining where we landed on the scoring. Once the applications came in, Rhode Island Housing shared the information with us. We formed an internal committee to actually review it. We had a lead staff person I want to thank as well. She's on the phone. Amy Boyle is was the lead person who dug into the details of every application. So if you ask detailed questions, she may be the person we defer to. She's on the line today. But she went through our scoring criteria and did a separate review for threshold and scoring of the applications, and then we ranked them in order and then compared notes with Rhode Island Housing as to how things were scoring on their side. And it is, as you can imagine, kind of a jigsaw puzzle, because if they don't get funds over here, then the financial feasibility is here. So sort of just optimizing all the best allocations was part of that back and forth, and we met with the team every week to kind of review where we were at in our respective. So I feel it was a very good collaborative process. And then at our committee reviewed, sort of once we got through everything and thought we had a final cut of it, we had an internal committee, myself, Assistant Secretary Moore, and Mike Tondra, who's our Director of Community Development. So we had a very highly experienced team looking at this in order to bring these recommendations to this committee to just have for a review. And so to cut to the details, I would say we have very high demand for these programs. We had a total of almost $84 million requested for a total of $25.3 that we had available between the two programs. With 30 different applications that we looked at, the majority, 23, were for the Priority Project Fund and 7 for the TOD program. So we had high demand. That's on the table on page 1 of the memo. Wanted to review that. The allocation, the lion's share of the resources also were the Priority Project Fund, where we had $21.23 million available, whereas we have just under $4 million for TOD program funding. On page 2, you can see the table 2 has the Priority Project Fund allocation. And with that, what you will notice includes both the projects that were funded as well as the projects that were scored but did not get funded. And you can see that the cutoff was we scored them in the order of their ranking, and or we funded them in the order of their ranking. All of these, except for one, have already appeared on this agenda for other sources of funding that have been reviewed and recommended by Rhode Island Housing. The one that has not been is the one ranked number 3, the Washington Street Apartment, which is a three-unit acquisition rehab in Central Falls. That's a somewhat modest request and proposal that this applicant put forth. But on review, even though it had a capital stack with other sources of funds, which if you look to page 8 and 9 of the packet, there's a summary of project sources and uses that were proposed. And it included proposals for Building Homes Rhode Island, Community Revitalization, and PHT, which were on how we did not score highly enough to award. And so we were looking at possible alternative paths to see this project across the finish line and identified that we could provide $500,000 in Priority Project Fund, pair that with a potential CDBG application, which would yet have to be submitted by the applicant, additional financing from Rhode Island Housing. All still to be finalized, but with this modest amount in a project like this, which scored so highly for the program, we are recommending that it be awarded time. So So that's the only exception, and I call your attention to that, not because it's the biggest thing, but because it's the only thing that's something you haven't seen yet, possibly. I will just say with Priority Project Fund that the criteria that we score through, it is provided as an appendix A to this packet, an overview of the scoring criteria that we look at, but in general, it's going to favor the projects that are serving extremely low-income households or special populations needing supported housing, persons transitioning out of institutional care or other settings, and just more generally, you know, vulnerable households. It is also funded with, both of these programs are funded with SFRF dollars, so a priority concern for us here is obviously the timeline for completion, so all these funds have to be spent by the 12/31/26. And I think that really is the sum total of what I need to say about the Priority Project Fund. So I can pause there if there are questions.
Thank you very much, Evan. Thank you, Seth. I'd just like to add that I think this makes eminent sense, all these funds coming together for housing. We're a small city. We should be able to work together, not across purposes.
Exactly.
So I appreciate your effort in reaching out to us and allowing us to, Rhode Island Housing, that is, to weave these funds into a project that we're also looking at. In a collaboration, I think, has been good. I just like to advise the other board members that we have been invited to view the awards that they're under the Department of Housing's purview. We're in an advising capacity on these. So I think it was kind to ask for our input on these. So please, if there's anything I think we've already talked about, as you said, the project that we're already funding today, maybe if there's anything in particular you'd like to add to the discussion we've had, or this Washington Street proposal, which we haven't discussed, would be helpful. I see that the Washington Street scored very highly under your program. It seems, I mean, it's a small transaction. Therefore, a little expensive. Obviously, it'd be better if there was a higher, you know, could get more efficiencies of scale. But
it's also great in that and another project that we funded differently are being done by the nonprofit affiliate of the Central Falls Housing Authority, mm-hmm. which is great. I know certainly a focus of some of the legislation last year was to power housing authorities to do development, and they're getting some good things started at Central Falls. They're doing a good job up there.
So this is a way for them to kind of get in,
mm-hmm. yep.
without exposing themselves to too great a risk or...
Tremendous support from the mayor,
mm-hmm.
which is great when you have local support.
Right.
From the leadership.
Provide the vouchers for it.
Yes.
Maybe I'll have questions/comments. Just like what? So... Pretty large range in the scoring for those that got funded. I mean, items 8, 9, and 10 are separated by a point. I mean, obviously, it's somewhat subjective, because, like, you know, it's a scoring criteria. So, like, yeah, try to figure this out. And I, you know, I realize that there's a, you know, deadline. I mean, I as well as anyone, right, recognize that there's a deadline and money and getting out the door. Do you feel like, I mean, just this whole process being somewhat new, you all, like, learn something in the scoring criteria? Maybe have you changed it in the future? Or, like, you know, I was it difficult to try to, like, parse between items 8, 9, and 10? Like, I mean, just, like,
I'll make the easier point, which is, so, and I will note, it is noteworthy that in the governor's $100 million bond proposal,
mm-hmm.
there is a priority project fund component.
Yes.
So we wish to replenish this fund. But having said that, would you want to comment on the scoring?
Yes, and I should invite Amy as well to speak to that. I think we did learn just, you know, some of the weighting we might look at a little differently just to, probably, you know, in some ways in which we looked at the time frame, particularly SFRF dollars, to make sure that was weighted properly. You might want to have that kind of consideration again. We got a little more heavily to reflect some of that. But on the margin, we ended up being able to accommodate the projects that we felt really were in the mix, the ones that made the most sense to fund, even though the scores may not have reflected a lot of difference. But Amy, did you have anything to add? I know Amy was having a little trouble hearing. Did you have any comments on whether there was a particular challenge around the scoring or what we learned from that rubric that we were using?
She might be muted, Deb. Oh. I usually mute everyone.
Oh,
she's open. She's open.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
you, TJ.
Specific to PTS, not really. On the TOD, I think that we found less so like scoring, but threshold-wise, we had written the solicitation for funding to say that only projects in designated TOD zones were eligible, and what we found was a lot of projects that had a lot of density, like projects downtown Providence on the square, were not technically in a TOD zone and therefore didn't qualify for the funding. So I think that, you know, and that's one of those things you don't realize until you're looking at the applications and scoring the projects, is that the way, yeah. So I think that is something that would need to be shifted in the future, but otherwise I don't think the scoring was. There was nothing too crazy that happened to learn from.
Okay. Great. I think we're going to move on to the TOD itself.
Yes. This is the last, and it is a single project that was really the only one that met the threshold requirements, so all the funds we've allocated to that project for Dexter Street Commons, which we just reviewed previously in the packet. And for, as Amy mentioned, the projects that are here are those that are in a municipally code-designated zoning, TOD zoning district. It also has to have at least 10% of the units at 80% AMI or lower, and at least 10 units per acre of density. So it has some of those kind of requirements baked into it. But I think the main issue here is that there are not a lot of TOD districts designated in the state. I believe only four. And so a lot of these just didn't quite hit that threshold, even though they were in, you know, dense and transit-focused areas, but had not yet been designated by the municipalities. So that's really the extent of what I have to say on that point.
A lot of development going on in that region, and it's very great to see the support, I guess, of, you know, from a bunch of different sides coming in to hopefully make sure that this is a success. Yes. This also has, was that Massachusetts Housing Investment funds coming in? Could
yes.
you speak to that a little bit? I find that a little interesting.
It is. The developer recruited those funds. We did not.
Mm-hmm.
The developer did, and we were favorably impressed.
Mm-hmm. So is that because that Massachusetts realizes that people who might be living down here are actually working up in?
That may well be true. My impression is, this is impression, it should be clarified with them, is that they're simply aiming to grow their portfolio and grow the market in which they invest.
And if you go across state lines,
yes.
obviously.
There are charter permits.
Yeah, that's
yep.
what I'm understanding.
Yep.
The circle
right.
where they can cover. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, very, very impressive, and a good sign that a developer would be convincing in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I will note, since you're looking at the capital stock, I will note that there is a commerce, meaning the Commerce Corporation line item, and the commerce is in the process of resolving its source, and they will take action, perhaps even next month, on the notation. Any other questions on any aspect of the priority projects or TOD fund process? Really appreciate the opportunity to present before this committee. I think it's good practice, and one thing that the Deputy Secretary has really emphasized is that these ought to be intertwined processes. Deb is right. She brings experience, as you know, from other jurisdictions, that since we're all going to be investing in these deals simultaneously, we must have a process where the dialogue and the determinations are made together, even if formally they ultimately are separate. So thank you one more time.
I think that concludes our meeting.
A couple of things. Okay. So Saturday we have a very big event at Jill Cathy Apartments. Time coming. 7 o'clock. Ribbon cutting at the site, and you'll be able to go in and see the apartment. Immediately following, at noontime, we have a block party with people in the neighborhood and owners of property. So that should be fun, and it looks like the weather is holding out for us. For our board meeting, you notice we changed the time to 1 p.m. to accommodate the governor. The governor will be joining us and making some comments. I appreciate being flexible to attend at that time.
Thank you, Carol, for making that possible.
Second.
Of course, all those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Yep.
Any opposed, say nay.
Yep.
Have a unanimous.
Better.
Thank you.
Remember.